It's 12:45 a.m. in the Sahara tent, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello and welcome to Night Call, a podcast to keep you company during those strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York City, and with me on the other end of the line in California, I have
Molly Lambert
and Tess Lynch
in Los Angeles, California,
in a creepy garage.
I know there's some ghost air going on over there.
There's some ghost air. We're in a podcast garage, a classic, classic Marc Maron style,
in the true LA garage. Tradition. Yeah.
But Tess warned me before we went in here. She was like, yeah, everything's fine, except there's like a fencing dummy in there that might scare you.
Wait, is this a different garage than you guys are usually
yeah,
in?
Yeah, we're usually in a house, and this week we're in a garage.
It's my garage, and it's not a podcast garage. Okay, it's a garage that I cannot get my car into because I have a long, narrow driveway, and it's scary. So it became like a repository for things.
It's a rumpus room.
It's a rumpus room.
A hobby hole.
A hobby hole. At some point, it was determined, not by me, that it needed a dummy for fencing practice made out of like a coat rack covered with like a super scary sheet and some batting. And it's just kind of right behind us.
Yeah. When Tess said a fencing dummy, I was like, I don't know what that means. But I was picturing like a crash test dummy, which would also be super
that would be
scary.
Worse.
But this yeah. is literally, it's just like a human form, like a dressmaker's form, just like covered in like a mummy sheet and wrapped so
Whoa.
It looks like somebody yeah it looks like a dead body.
It does. It looks like a dead
fencing?
Body standing up. What?
Who fencing?
Fences? Peter.
I mean, my husband's an ex-fencer.
Is an ex-fencer.
Wow, and, I didn't know that.
He parried his way into her heart.
But then he was like, you know, I think I'm gonna do like an art project and create, and I was just like, not in the house, get it out of the house. And he was like, garage it is.
It looks like a sculpture. It's on a Christmas tree stand. I'm gonna take a picture of it.
Yeah,
we'll
please share it with our
call
listeners
socials. But even scarier maybe than the form, the body, is there's like a hand sticking up behind it that's a glove.
I didn't notice.
So it looks like there's like a hand reaching out of the couch a little bit, which adds to the spookiness. This would be very spooky at night if you were alone.
Yeah, that's like the kind of form that seems benign during the day, and then when it's silhouetted at night, it just looks like a person
during
in the window.
Day. It's terrifying during the day. We're in here right now, and it's a little chilly.
I'm not Joanna Gaines, okay? I did not design this space well.
Where's the shiplap?
Where's the shit? Honestly, it would be fun now that I'm in here for the first time in a long time. It is a long story why we're in the garage,
it's
but here we are.
It's very spacious, though. I was going to say.
Yeah, it's big.
Most, you know, this isn't, like, full of stuff. There's, like, it's like a room, an empty room with a body in it.
You're welcome, chill.
I think it might be an escape room.
You can come and leave for free unless you cross me. And then we'll see. Then we'll see where we are.
So,
McKamey, Tess's garage.
So we wanted to follow up real quick with some feedback that we got from a night call a couple episodes ago at this point. The call that we got about the phone call, a call about a call, the one that had the ice cream truck music and the little voice that said, hello,
hello,
which sounded really, I think that gave us all the chills.
Yeah, a recent episode, but already a classic, a night call classic,
exactly.
The ice cream truck.
Hello.
Hello. When I was in New York, I heard so many ice cream trucks and I thought about it every time.
Did you make any calls, Molly?
No, I should.
That was a ripe opportunity,
miss. It didn't occur to me to call any of you and ambiently leave terrifying ice cream truck music. Because what if you picked up? And you'd be like, why are you calling me and doing
this? Hi, Molly.
Hey, Molly. a lot of our listeners told us to check out a Reply All episode that was pertinent to this particular scam.
Yeah.
Emily, would you like to summarize?
Yeah, so the caller on Reply All had an issue that sounded similar. I'd be interested to hear from our caller if her story at all overlaps with this, because the main difference for the caller on Reply All is that she was getting a bunch of calls and they were on a toll-free line in her office. So it wasn't a cell phone, which I believe our listener had gotten the call on a cell phone. Because I think I remember her saying that she had been in the car with friends when she decided to answer it. But so this person on Reply All had gotten a series of calls that she started recording because they were they just sounded like they were coming from all these different places. They almost sounded like field recordings of different spots, and they play them on the show. And it is kind of eerie. Like there's a series of ones that are like at a basketball game with a kid talking. There's some stuff that's like seems to be out in a field and you can hear something that sounds like an air raid siren or something going off. It's just really kind of eerie stuff that feels kind of creepypasta-ish or something, like just this sort of unexplainable kind of, I don't know, like found art type thing or something. So she called and was asking about it. And so they investigated, and the thing that they kind of figured it was, and they like went all the way to like talking to an FBI agent who had been assigned to this case, is that it's a form of phone fraud, but that only applies, I think, with the toll-free number, because like these people will put all these calls into these, like just kind of create a bot essentially that sends all these calls to these toll-free lines and then gets, like has at one point along the chain of like towers and carriers, they get a kickback for that call being sent through. So the longer you can keep the person on the line, which is the reason for like the weird recording, and have a longer call, even if it means just like making it a minute as opposed to 30 seconds, that all adds up to being, you know, quite a bit of money potentially.
I want to know how much money that really is.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, they were enough for the FBI to get involved, because I think that phone fraud is fairly common, but it's not something that's reported a lot because it's kind of opaque and boring. But I think a lot of like there's stuff where
Wait, are podcasts a phone fraud scam?
They keep you on the line as long as like 3-hour podcasts. Yes. No, I think, well, there are some cases of people doing phone fraud to fund terrorism, because you can just like do all these junk calls, but if you get a kickback from the carrier, then it can like totally add up. So yeah, so this was their theory about it, and they more or less solved it on the show. Even though the lady still was getting calls. And one of the guys who was involved in figuring out what was going on said that there are so few people who would know how to do this or have the like time. Like he's like, this person has to be retired if they're doing this, and probably worked in the telecom industry, because they know what, you know, they know how it works. Yeah. Yeah. So they're like, he was like, there's like 5 people in the world and I've probably talked to them. Like who do this?
Wow.
It was a very interesting episode.
That's interesting. I wonder if that is what this is part of, or if it's its own thing. Because my immediate response to that was that if you're going to call somebody and you're trying to get them to stay on the line and you do something creepy and then you keep calling back and it's like the same creepy thing over and over again, such as an ice cream truck, my response would be to like hang up immediately the next time they called. I wouldn't be like, I'm going to stay on the line longer to see if like more context reveals itself. The thing about the field recordings makes more sense, because it's like you would stay on the line to try to gather context.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
well, is that also why I mean, this is maybe stupid, but is that why you'll often receive like telemarketing phone calls with like such long lags?
Yeah, definitely. That's why people in telemarketing take a really long time to like introduce themselves and say what they're doing. And sometimes I'll stay on the line with them, because I'm like, I know you're getting paid.
Right.
The longer that you talk to me.
Yeah.
Is that why they have the lag? I thought that was just because the calling machine had a pause.
It was taking time to connect them.
Yeah.
I thought it was just to make the whole experience longer, because the longer it is,
because I
more
think
they
that lag is bad, because most people hang up
just
during
hang
that
up.
Lag. Yeah.
I always talk to the telemarketers. I'm always trying to get them to break the facade tell me some personal detail about themselves.
I do that occasionally, but you have to really catch me in the right mood for me to stick around. I mean, I never begrudge the person who's calling. I always feel bad for them. It's just like, I don't have time to have this conversation right now. Hey guys, Mother's Day is coming up. What are you guys doing for your moms?
Well, my mom lives across the country from me, which is terrible. And I am definitely going to be sending her flowers because she has been lamenting the longest winter ever. So yeah. I'm going to hit her with some flowers this year, guys.
Nothing feels more grown than sending flowers to your mom for Mother's Day, I can attest.
It's true.
Flowers say thanks. Thanks, Mom.
So Pro Flowers is a really good place for all your Mother's Day needs. You can go and pick out the perfect bouquet. You can customize it any way you want, go big or small, or as big as your mother's, your love for your mother is.
Impossible, but you could get close.
And why just stop at Mother's Day? Moms deserve more than one day. So the flowers will last 7 whole days at least. That will remind her that you're a good daughter and you love her.
So right now, our listeners can send 100 colorful blooms with a free glass vase, just $19.99 plus shipping and handling, with our promo code NIGHTCALL.
With fresh flowers, guaranteed delivery, and unique vases and accessories that mom will love, Pro Flowers has everything you need to get your Mother's Day shopping done for all the moms you know.
I love that you said vases.
Hey, Tess is a mom too. Maybe we can send Tess some flowers.
You absolutely should. I will accept them gladly. I like gardenias. That's what I want.
You can also choose the delivery date you want, and it's going to be guaranteed to be delivered on that date. And you can get it delivered on Sunday, May 13th, aka Mother's Day. So the only way to get 100 colorful blooms with a free glass vase, visit proflowers.com. Click on the blue microphone in the upper right corner and use the code NIGHTCALL. That is proflowers.com and use the code NIGHTCALL.
Did you guys call into any weird 800 numbers or anything?
When?
Like as like a kid. Today? Like a kid. Like did you ever like call a hotline?
Oh, I called hotlines. I feel like I called Loveline probably.
Really?
I mean, I think I did. Like, did you call? Like, I was always on the phone.
Did you have a problem, or you just wanted to call to see what happened?
I think I just wanted to say what's up. I mean, I just have this memory of like, you know, if there was a number to call, calling it kind of. And I also tend to stay on with telemarketers. Although the Windows PC, there's a virus on your Windows computer. It's gone every time I've like had a real engagement. I get so sad about that scam.
What are you talking about?
I have a landline, so I get like a lot of telemarketing calls. Yeah. And there's this one scam where people, you know, you're called by a supposed technician who says that there's a problem. You have like a virus on your Windows computer, which of course the likelihood of you having is not, right. You know.
So a lot of these are targeted at
These are targeted at older people, right. And then they can kind of block you out of your computer remotely if you have a, you know. So yeah.
That's interesting too, though. So but also, like, I feel like the people who get into those scams sometimes it's because they're lonely and they're like, somebody called me.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. It kind of preys on this boomer fear of like, you know, the like computer virus. My dad was so preoccupied with computer viruses.
Tell our listeners about your nightmare.
Oh, well, this is off topic because it's not
It's related to fear and terror and nighttime.
It's so over the weekend, I took a nap. I feel pretty guilty about it. I don't often nap.
How dare you?
I always feel really bad about it. I took a nap.
Why?
And of course, I don't know why. I should have been doing other stuff. I took a nap. And of course, because it was a nap, I had a nightmare, like a terrible nightmare. And it was so brief that I only really remember the point just before I woke up, where I had my computer in my lap and blood just started gushing out of all of the ports. And it was the most terrifying nightmare I've ever had. Like, it was awful.
I was like, you saved that for your Stephen King novel. Yeah. That is a beautiful, scary image.
It was, and I woke up and I was like, what would I do if that happened? Like, would I take it to the Genius Bar? Like, I know it would be somehow my fault. Like, the blood was like my fault.
I just was watching the original It, the TV movie one, which is so good.
It is not good, Mom.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You're talking about the Harry Anderson?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the original one.
Oh, my God. I watched it semi-recently. I found it to be like all borderline unwatchable. But
yeah. Oh, no, it's so good. You're crazy.
I also liked the Stan TV movie.
Yeah, me too. I love all the Stephen King TV movies. Team Stephen King TV movies on the West Coast over here.
All right.
But I was just going to say the part in it when Beverly is in the bathroom and the like balloon starts just like a balloon starts inflating out of the sink and then it just like pops and it's full of blood.
Yeah.
Super scary.
It's great.
Also, we were watching it and my boyfriend was like, wait, is this about puberty?
Could be. Did you see the new It?
No, I did not, actually.
They do that scene. The version of that scene that's in the new one, I think, is pretty great.
Wait, you like the new It more than the original It?
It's a more competent movie, I would say, yeah. Whoa. I mean, I don't love it, but it's like, damn. There's some scary stuff in it. Yeah.
Whereas, oh, man.
What?
I said, oh, man. I'm just, I'm riding for the original It.
Well, wait, as well. Emily, how old were you when you saw the original It?
Oh, I didn't see it until I was an adult. I mean,
there's the ticket. There you go. There's the thing.
Yeah. that would be it. I saw it as an adult and a person who writes about movies. So, yeah.
Look, all I'm saying is if you saw Tim Curry as that clown, if you like turned the corner out of the Audio Boom office in a moment and you see Tim Curry as that clown in Times Square.
Oh yeah, no, he's great. And he's better than what's his face? The Skarsgård brother who's Pennywise. There's like the new one.
Elizabethan Ruff.
Yeah.
To be Pennywise.
Fancy clown.
That's how you do it. That's what I thought was so funny. I was like, for the gritty reboot, they gave him like an old timey clown.
But wait, he had like a frilly thing going on in the original.
They made it like more Victorian.
It's like one of those funniest stiff collars. It's like
so it's more Baroque. It's a little steampunk, you might say.
Yeah. Okay. A tad steampunk.
Speaking of things that belong to a certain time, Emily wrote a really, really, really great piece on Vulture about EDM music and the recession. I highly recommend you check it out. So, Emily, did you want to talk more about that?
Yeah. So, yeah, Avicii passed away. I think it was Thursday night and he was 28 years old, but there are very few deaths now and it feels like there's another death every week, but that was one where I held out my computer like it was on fire. It was like, what? Because I mean, yes, he's very young, but it also just felt like I don't know. It kind of felt like an end of an era in a way. And I texted you guys and Molly sent back the picture of from Boogie Nights where they have the goodbye to the 70s, welcome 80s banner. And that is definitely what this feels like. And morbidly, I was telling Sam, my coworker on Slack, I was like, just for writerly purposes, because I've always just been interested in writing and thinking about EDM, and it feels very much like it's felt like it's on the downswing for many years now, and I was always kind of having my antenna out for the thing that would make it feel like it was over, like, you know, some big club closing in Vegas or you know, some drastic change to the lineup at Coachella or something like that. And this, you know, kind of undoubtedly felt like it was it, but it was certainly not what I ever would have wanted to have happen or predicted or anything. So it was really shocking.
I thought the first end of EDM was when people died on the Hardfest boat, when that girl like disappeared, you know?
And then you realize it happens at every festival all the time.
One of the big things was when they moved Electric Daisy Carnival from LA to Vegas.
Yeah.
And part of the reason they moved it was because they were like, too many underage kids are going right at the Coliseum. And some of these raves that they do in like these giant indoor arenas, I find that like that seems like the worst possible environment to go to a rave in. But this obviously, Avicii like retired from performing a couple of years ago
because he had
such bad issues with, I think, drinking
mostly. He said he had his like pancreas removed or something, and he had pancreatitis. He was just having really, really bad health problems, and he was like, maybe I'll come back when I'm 60.
Yeah. People, somebody was saying, like, now this turns, I took a pill in Ibiza into, yes, like, Hotel California.
Yes, that was, you know, James Brooks. Yeah. No, it was Candle in the Wind. It was, yeah.
Oh, Candle in the Wind. Oh, yeah. Tess is making such a face right
shuddered.
Now.
I just shuddered. That's hard for me, guys.
I know, but we respect, you know, we can just transpose it onto music that you like.
You can transpose it. Sorry.
I was always trying to get you to do a column called EDM-ally.
There's still time.
Yeah.
Well, I always wanted, it was one of these things I always wanted to write about, and it was kind of hard to, like, pitch in a convincing way, like, why I thought it was interesting.
And there were, like, a handful of us that, like, liked EDM and would talk about it. Yeah. But, you know, it's very much like the way that it was talked about, I feel like, was always, like, hair metal, where...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously a lot of problems with EDM in terms of, like, what kinds of DJs become the biggest DJs in the world, mm-hmm, and the fact that they're all
dudes,
straight white guys. You know, especially because dance music culture comes so much out of queerness, mm-hmm, and non-whiteness, and the fact that all these big DJs were like Calvin Harris, you know, Avicii, Diplo, like.
And all these like,
guys are the same kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just sort of the advent of, like, bro step and dance music becoming just bro-y in a certain way.
It became this thing where it was, like, frat guys wanted to go essentially to the disco, which felt like an interesting
turn. Frat guys on ecstasy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I like about the movie Saturday Night Fever, is it's about, like, the end of disco when it is, like, meatheads in the suburbs, you know, just using it to pick up women.
Going off of that, like, I was looking at some old blog posts I had written, and, like, it's, and I was pointing this out at the time, and in retrospect, it feels even more soon that, like, Jersey Shore was a great harbinger of EDM because of, totally, like, the fist pumping and everything.
About, yeah, it was about house music in the bridge and tunnel house music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I argue with my boyfriend a lot about Saturday Night Fever because I'm always like, it's such a great movie. And he's like, it's a bad disco movie, which is true, you know? And the person who wrote it was actually writing about the mod scene and just, like, transposed all the details to be about disco. And I'm like, that's what's good about it. It doesn't matter what the scene is. But he's very firm of, like, yeah, but there are no good disco movies. There's no movie about, like, Paradise Garage. There's, like, 54 and just, like, why it's so hard for people to make a good artifact about dance music culture, and a lot of the best things are documentaries,
right? I mean, I will sit down for any old EDM documentary.
Did you watch the one, there was one that was about, like, everyone going to a festival, and I can't remember even what the festival was, but it was like a infomercial for the festival, but it was actually really interesting.
There is one.
Like, people from all over the world going to a festival and, like, following their stories.
Well, they did they did an EDC documentary a few years ago that was, like, because they do, like, a kind of big, like, victory lap clip every year for EDC in Vegas, where they show everything. But then they did an actual feature length thing. I think it was in 2014, because I think it was the year that I was out there. And it is just an ad for, I mean, like, the Swedish House Mafia documentary, which I always recommend to anybody, because it's, like, so, it really, especially in light of Avicii's death, like, I think really sheds a pretty unflattering light,
it's an accidental spinal tap.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, the people around them, you know, like, when you see what it's like. It's a lot, actually, like, have you guys ever seen Cocksucker Blues, the Rolling Stones documentary
that you're not
supposed to see? It's so good because it's just, like, really depressing. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the height of the Rolling Stones, like, glamour and coke years. And it's just, like, these super sad hangers-on and all these junkies following Keith Richards around. And it just, like, makes being backstage and, like, just anyone who's not the Rolling Stones, and even the Rolling Stones, because you're, like, everyone's trying to get something from them. It just feels so gross like, really demythologizes it, because you're like, oh, this would be, like, a horrible environment be in every day of your life. And with these DJs, especially, like, a lot of them you know, end up getting sober, because like to just be in the club every night, you like cannot be getting fucked up every night, even though that's like what the crowd might be there for, you know,
yeah,
is to like have their party, their brains out. It's like,
that's
it's your job.
You're at work. Yeah. You're in right. your office. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they all are like, we don't drink, or like, we don't do drugs or anything. And like, at first you're like, yeah, right. You're saying that because you're in this documentary and you want to like look up. But then you watch it and you're like, actually, no, I believe you. And I understand why you wouldn't. Like, it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But, yeah. I profiled Martin Garrix when I was at MTV, who's like a young Dutch deep super world star. World star. Superstar DJ. And yeah, I mean, his schedule was like so incredibly regimented, and he had just like a lot of handlers who were like, you know, whose job it is to like wake him up and make sure he goes to the next place. Mm-hmm. But it's also like I ended up feeling a weird kind of empathy for him, because I was like, even though this is like the greatest life and he's living his dream, he has like all these people on his payroll where like he can't get sick or fuck up, or like mm-hmm. their day is fucked. And he like has to just be in like a different, he has to be in like Vegas and then like, you know, Antwerp the next day and then like Tokyo.
Yeah. I think that Martin Garrix's career also is like totally follows the model of the Avicii career, where it's like he had the one song, he had the one really just like kind of culture, it, not to the degree of Levels, but like the song that was a lot of places.
Yeah, Animals. And like my argument for like why that was great also was, I was just like, how often do you hear instrumentals become like a big song, you know?
Yeah.
Even though instrumentals are so much a part of like EDM, it's like very rare for an instrumental song to become a radio hit for whatever dumb reason. And, you know, I definitely have a weakness for like EDM and big room techno and super clubs and all that stuff. Yeah. And I've talked about like when I went to see Martin Garrix, we went to like Caesar's Palace to the super club and like went in through the back entrance, you know, and it was awesome. And then, you know, I was like, oh, this is good. Like, I am not too jaded for this ever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it's a weird, I wrote about this somewhat in the article, but like, I think that Levels was sort of the one that broke it, but this whole kind of post-recession, like people like us who, I don't think that maybe prior to that, I don't think either of us would have necessarily been like, oh, we're gonna like, you know, be glamorized by Vegas super clubs and like think that that's the coolest thing and actually like forget about
it. It's totally something we bonded over at Grantland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, we're the ones who, we both like Las Vegas and like glitter.
Yeah, but I feel like the whole Vegas boom around that and the whole culture and how it, the way it just became the part of the fabric of just like capitalist culture, just like that there's a dubstep drop in like a Macy's Thanksgiving Day sale ad or something like that, you know, it just became the texture of everything. And
it came to signify like party.
Yeah. Right. Or like, yeah, just some, I don't know. I feel like I could spend the next 5 years just trying to dissect what it signified, but it did feel so post-recessional.
Like, music has changed. I was just listening to Jonesy's Jukebox on the way over, as I often am. Mm-hmm. And like sometimes when I'm listening to Jonesy's Jukebox and I'm like, you know, they're playing all the classic rock, I'm just like, rock music is kind of over. Like, it's been over.
He plays some weird stuff, though.
He plays a lot of weird stuff. But I'm like, I like this music, but also, like, does it sound like ragtime?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's kids, like jazz, you know?
Dusty music.
Yeah, it is like jazz. It's like a specialty form. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like, in order for a band to, like, the next really big band, I don't know, maybe we're going back to, like, DJs and bands, going back to rap rock.
Yeah, I mean, now Ben just shook his head.
I mean, welcome to Night Call, Ben. We like rap rock and EDM.
If you grew up watching shows like Family Matters or Full House, and no, I do not mean Fuller House, FOH with that, you really need to hear Raised by TV from Earwolf. It's a really funny podcast. It's hosted by comedians John Gabris and Lauren Lapkus. And when they were growing up, these two watched a lot of TV, like a lot of TV. And they cover everything that you remember from your 80s and or 90s childhood, including candy and commercials and toys, all the junk that filled up your head if you grew up around then. They just released a new season covering the beloved Nickelodeon late night block SNICK. And plus, they're joined by guests like Scott Aukerman from Comedy Bang Bang and other luminaries and funny people from the comedy and podcast world. And it's one of those podcasts that will make you laugh embarrassingly on the subway when you think that nobody is looking at you. So subscribe to Raised by TV now in your favorite podcast app like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Now there are like parents, especially like Brooklyn parents, will like send their kids to go to rock school in the way that I feel like we, like our parents would encourage us to do jazz. Like I didn't do jazz, but like I know a lot of kids that I went to high school with. It's like, oh, you like play the trombone and then you join the jazz like group at school or something. It's like became a part of your formalized education instead of something cool that you did when you weren't at school. And I feel like that's sort of where rock is now.
It's funny because rock still has that like that theme of rock is that it's like, you know, for the kids and like breaking away.
If you're hip, you're listening to rock.
You're listening to rock. But then, you know, yeah, it's, I don't know. Although I've been arguing with people online about the band Greta Van Fleet. Have you guys heard them?
No.
They're like a bunch of 20-year-olds and they just sound exactly like Led Zeppelin. And then there was this interview with Robert Plant where he was like, I know where he got that voice. He took it from me.
Yeah,
but Justin Bieber's been posting about them a lot, like Greta Van Fleet. But it's like it does feel almost like it's like rock, 70s rock cosplay rather than like
totally.
And it does feel like the last iteration of rock that we even really got, which was the, you know, the New York Meet Me in the Bathroom stuff was also very like cosplay-y, reference dependent, like, you know, we're a shitty Gang of Four bands. I appreciated that EDM, because so much of the, I was so like not into the Strokes wave stuff, I think, because so much of it was about like rich people posturing that they have no money.
Yeah.
And EDM is like the opposite because it's like not rich people posturing that they're incredibly wealthy for like one night, you know?
Right.
It's like you save up all your money and you go to the club and get bottle service. Although we did a little bit see the dark side of it at Hakkasan recently.
Yeah, the completely mobbed version of it. I mean, I didn't actually go to a club in Vegas until I was there to like write. I never went for fun. When I went with you guys, that was the first time I actually went, you know, on my own accord. I mostly preferred like going to festivals and stuff for that kind of thing because you can just sort of wander and you're not all cramped in this place where you have to spend so much money on alcohol or whatever.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I have great memories of going to Hardfest with you. I have great memories of going to Coachella a few times. I was saying like the night of that Avicii's death was announced, I was like, I want to be in the Sahara tent right now just to like, because it feels like this day EDM died thing and I just want to see what's going on, like what the vibe is. If any if any Nightcall listeners were in the Sahara tent on Friday, what was that, the 20th? It was 420. Then please, give us the report from on the ground. I'm very interested.
Yeah, if you had an Avicii emotional breakdown, we would like to hear from you because we are our listeners.
We are your friends.
That's the singularity.
We are your friends. We care about your EDM feelings.
I thought one of the best things, Emily, that you kind of talked about and described was that the kind of like adrenaline that went on, you know, around the recession, being of an age where you don't, like, you're kind of scraping your way into a career and needing to, like, almost give yourself, it was almost just, like, kicking your body and being, like, you know, just keep going.
Yeah.
And EDM's not, like, I'm not, like, anti-EDM. It's just not, like, it doesn't give me the feelings like I, you know.
Tessa likes IDM.
IDM too.
I know. We all like IDM.
But I mean, but I connected to every, like when you know, were writing about like couch surfing and then just having to like, just watch everything kind of collapse and be at an age where you can't really handle seeing that.
But at the same time, I just thought that was like just what everyone's 20s were like.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, I was so excited for my 20s always because I like watched too many Sonic Youth videos. And then they're like pretty depressing and suck, especially if you like can't, you know, find a steady job. It's like,
well, I
it can be rough, but I conflated that with the recession because it didn't occur to me that there was like ever a time when you could like get out of college and get a job, right. You
yeah.
know?
And I mean, I think also there's a key difference between like growing up and being in your early 20s and having somebody like Sonic Youth, like a kind of disaffected, like, and too cool for school and like, you know, too cool for your corporate culture or whatever, like for a while anyway, like band versus something that's just so nakedly capitalist as EDM.
Yeah, which I think is maybe kind of the generational split on that. Was maybe it was just hard for some people to see why you could ever like that for the same reason people that disdain hair metal, which is just like, it's about fucking partying.
Yeah, you know? And it's like not about, it felt so refreshing. I think because we were all poor and like unable to imagine ever being gainfully employed or having any money. And so something that was just so like, yeah, that felt such the opposite of reality, but also wasn't trying, like, the last thing you would want to listen to is like, yeah, like something like garage rock or like, you know, people like rich people pretending to be poor or something. That's like the furthest from like where you wanted to go with music. I feel like at that time you wanted to escape to like the computer generated fantasy. And that is what Levels offered.
Yeah. I mean, I was totally not like a pure rockist, but I was definitely like an indie rock person throughout my life. And then like after college was probably the first time I started really like getting into dance music because it just also felt so vast to me. I was like,
yeah,
I don't even know where the entry point is. And like warehouse parties are great. Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's awesome to be in a weird, sweaty church with a bunch of people that are all just bonding over music.
Oh, it's that's the other thing I could talk about for a zillion years is like the way it just all feels like Hillsong after a certain point.
Yeah, like, it does feel like Hillsong. Well, I think about that a lot because I'm really interested in like, you know, group dynamics and weirdly these things cover just all the things I'm interested in from, you know, EDM to the Olympics you know, like there's something scary about the power of
crowds. That, yeah, like, I should also say that Hillsong is like Justin Bieber's church and like the big mega super church from Australia.
Yeah, it's a mega church. There's something really comforting and amazing about like losing yourself in a group that is also really scary and the common feeling,
like experiencing the same feeling as a huge group of people.
Yeah. Right. And with EDM, it's so based around the drop. It's like, you know, it is like they revs up your serotonin, you know, and like a really good DJ, you know, some of those super DJs are not that good and some of them are great. You know, it really depends on who you're talking about and I won't name and shame, but you can feel free to ask me all my real opinions offline. But yeah, a really good DJ can like manipulate your brain waves in a way that is so pleasurable and does take control. You know, I mean, I guess the ideal is like something where you have like some control, but like you're giving up some control.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're not totally just being manipulated. You're like part of the manipulation of yourself.
Yeah.
As with drugs.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite like recordings of any EDM ever is an Above and Beyond live recording. I think it's like at Wembley or something like that. And so you can hear the crowd noise and it's like this remix of like one of their really big songs. And like as it's building, something about the way the crowd is recorded makes you just envision everybody being inside like a big tilt-a-whirl and everybody's like screaming and stuff and like because they know the big thing is going to happen and it's like so joyous to listen to. And like, you know, and I remember being like going to whatever, like a Modest Mouse show or something in like 2002 or 2003 or whatever and being...
Tess and I were probably there.
Yeah, it was All Tomorrow's Parties. And being so irritated by everybody around me who liked the band that I liked. Because I was like, fuck you, this is my band. Like,
well, there's like a thing in indie rock that is the arms folded at the show.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, like so much of Gen X stuff was about like not selling out, but like,
not really experiencing pleasure in anything that should give you a fun time.
Being cooler than everybody.
Just punishing yourself.
Like punishing other people by being like withholding information and, you know, and the way information was dispersed was so different. Like, mixtape culture did so much come out of, like, you need someone to turn you on to stuff.
It has to be
social. You can't just find it yourself. And then we were totally the kids from the LCD Sound System song who were like, hey, I learned about all this stuff on the internet and I know just as much as you. And it didn't take me, like, any money to crate dig. Because that was the big thing I always resented was, like, if you wanted to have a great record collection, you had to have money.
You had to spend much money and have the time also to, like, you go out and search for records instead of going to your job at the coffee shop or something.
Hey there, are you a fan of podcasts? Probably you are, if you're listening to this one, and maybe there's a chance you've thought about starting your own. But once you've recorded your show, what's the next step? How are you going to reach listeners and build your audience? Well, Audioboom can help with their $9.99 monthly subscription plan for hosting and distribution. With Audioboom's $9.99 subscription plan, you get 200 minutes of recording time for each episode, a branded homepage on the Audioboom platform, embeddable players for web and social media, unlimited storage, and episode scheduling. Plus, thanks to Audioboom's partnerships with the leading distribution and streaming platforms, your show may be eligible for placement on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn, pending approval by each platform. And with Audioboom's advanced analytics, you'll be able to see how often your show's been downloaded, what devices your audience uses to listen to your show, the age, gender, and location of your listeners, and so much more. So to sign up for your $9.99 monthly subscription plan, go to audioboom.com/start and sign up today. That's audioboom.com/start. Sign up now and get the support you need to start your podcast today. That's audioboom.com/start.
So, transitioning from the end of one era to another end of an era that feels kind of connected to this. We wanted to talk a little bit about the end of Craigslist personals and Backpage and what that means for the internet in the future.
Well, we were talking last week about Art Bell and kind of message board radio and the kind of equivalent on the internet of places where it really genuinely felt not necessarily unmoderated, but definitely not there for like making people a ton of money. It's more just like an open town square where people could wave their respective freak flags. This was I think it was at the end of March that this act basically It rendered Craigslist personals and Backpage more culpable in the case in cases of human trafficking and sex abuse and that kind of stuff, so that they would be considered accessories to a crime if something was to pass through there. So that is why those places had to shut down their services, basically, which also made it so that a lot of sex workers who were not trafficked are out of a very vital part of how they make their money, which is obviously very bad. And I'm not sure where the activism is as far as like, or not where it is, but like, you know, what the status is on trying to get it reversed, because I know that there's a big movement around that right now.
It seems crazy. It definitely feels like trying to litigate the internet and privacy in the way that they're trying to do now is crazy, because you can't put it all back in the box, and that's just what they are trying to do.
Well, it's so wild that you can do that. I mean, it's not wild, I guess. It's very predictable, but you can do that for something like Craigslist Personals because it's so small and really not that much of a economic force, whereas I think something like Facebook, which if you want to talk about stuff on the internet that has led to documentable harm is definitely more, has way more going on there, including, I'm sure, some, if you are that concerned about sex trafficking, I'm sure that you could probably tie some cases to Facebook.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you can't, you know, they're not like litigating people's private messages on like Instagram or Twitter, where, you know, you could use all these things exactly the same way. The fact that it's just Craigslist personals and Backpage, which are totally resources that sex workers need to work safely just feels like just part of the garbage time that we're in.
Yeah, right.
And Craigslist personals, especially, I feel like that was just one of the first things on the internet.
It feels like so early. It feels like this first flag planted down or something.
Like, are missed encounters gone?
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good question.
Missed connections are still there, I believe. That is the one remaining part of the personals there.
That's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, maybe there's a way to migrate everybody who used personals onto and like kind of sure just take that, over
I'm
missed
sure
connections.
It's happening right now. I haven't looked.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
That's the thing with all, like, the way, you know, with SestaFosta, which was a really evil bill that really targeted sex workers, you know, and it's all these horrible right wing idiots who are advocating for this kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's so weird in the Trump era, obviously, where we have like sex workers who have encountered Trump, you know, and just that those are the people that pay sex workers are right. also the people that are like, this shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
And if it exists, it should be dangerous for the, you know, I don't know, the way that this just seems like such a bad fix for any, you know, I don't even know how much of a real problem this is.
And in the meantime, it takes away this whole community. And I think especially for LGBT people who are trying, like, there's still, that's still like a pretty vital place for people to meet each other and to, you know, explore their needs and everything. And that,
right. It's like the internet that we talk about a lot of, like, oh, the internet where like people can meet that like need to meet each other, you know, that like wouldn't the inner north.
That's like the lame internet after
the inner north.
Yeah, that the promise of the internet was like, I'll be able to find the other people that share my interests, especially if those interests are like things I need to keep secret for like safety reasons.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And just this idea that you're making it that much harder for people because it's not like sex work is ever going to stop or go away. You're just making these people's lives like much more dangerous.
And there's no real replacement for any of those forms. I mean, I was curious because I saw that this had happened and I went to go check on this this app, I guess you could call it, that I did a story on a couple years ago called Olala. That's like a paid dating app that is based in Germany, and they were trying to roll out in the States. And I think that there was a lot of legal problems with it, obviously, because of the way that
I heard they're like doing stings on seeking arrangement and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just all of these sites, which I totally feel like should be allowed to exist, because who fucking cares if somebody is paying for sex as long as everybody is getting paid, you know?
Right.
And can be safe.
Well, the woman who started Olala like originally had a site or had an app that was for sex workers where they could advertise themselves and contact people and like, you know, have it be this sort of moderated messaging service. And you could also report people and stuff like that. But that, you know, that was in Berlin and where, you know, it's legal. So it's very different over here. But that didn't even last because people were, I think, didn't want to have their names attached to it, like the Johns didn't. It became such a thing where it was like, you know, for a while when it was working and when people were using it, it was like, oh, cool, I don't have to like stand outside in the cold anymore or like potentially, you know, be in an unsafe area.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like what we need is regulation and legalization, not just shutting things down that, you know, might be flawed, but serve a crucial purpose. And it does just seem like they made it about trafficking in order to sort of shove all this other stuff in, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people were calling out Bernie Sanders because he voted for SestaFosta.
Really?
And then like retweeted a Cardi B thing recently. And everybody was like, hey, Cardi B was a stripper and a sex worker. And like, she just gave a whole speech about how like sex workers at her level in like the strip club don't get the same attention for like Me Too stuff that like Hollywood actresses might get.
Yeah.
And Yeah, so, you know, fuck him for trying to co-opt that. It sucks.
Yeah.
Cardi B for prez, obviously.
No celebrities for president.
No celebrities for president. Miranda, legalize it.
Yeah, that's
Miranda, fix the subway.
That's as far as I get, because she just wants to be governor. I was suspicious until she started putting her money where her mouth is, and already, like, even her presence is
helping. I'm just saying,
things.
Everything Cardi B has done so far has been unprecedented. So, you know, and she loves FDR. So will never rule out a Cardi B presidency.
I have to say, I was a little shocked in that article. I forget who wrote it now, but just the person who reported it didn't know that FDR like started Social Security. I was like, come on, guys.
Oh, man.
Like, we need to know this.
Maybe they were just leading her to talk about it more by asking
journalistic
questions.
Who's that? Franklin Delano Roosevelt? Tell me more. yeah. No, I mean, she's great. Whatever. I mean, I don't need her to run for president, but she's great. And she should continue talking about the New Deal.
I think she deserves way better than to be president, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It turns out being president kind of sucks.
Yeah. Just like being in a rock band or being an EDM DJ.
There are
no good jobs.
All these glamorous jobs are actually not that glamorous.
But podcasting from a garage.
Podcasting from a garage, it keeps us humble.
I'm going to flip this place for $2 million. Yeah.
You're living the recession dream. Did you say you're going to flip it for $2 million because you know that's how much Marc Maron is charging?
I haven't checked Redfin. Did it close?
Everyone's just been posting about it because it's like the famous podcasting garage.
The pod cave.
This is also a famous podcasting garage.
One day it will be.
We're going to take a picture with the scary fencing dummy to show you all.
And then I'll take a picture here in the shiny Audio Boom Studios just so that...
Take a picture with Ben's leather jacket so we can see what it sounds like.
It's a members only jacket also, you should know. It's a leather members only jacket.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say members only jackets make a lot of noise.
Yeah, they do.
Nylon.
Is that real leather?
Members can hear them.
Okay.
Let's get some Night Call members only jackets.
Yeah.
Oh, we should.
And then we'll wear them to the Super Club together.
I'll drive you guys there and back.
And then we'll do a choreographed dance routine like in Girls Trip that we've been practicing.
Please. If any of our listeners have any ideas for merch that they would purchase from Night Call, they should let us know, because that's a very real possibility on the horizon.
You would like a Night Call tinfoil hat.
Yeah, if we can.
That's such a good idea.
Can we have metallic baseball hats? And
oh, that's a great idea, actually. I saw a picture of Art Bell. I was looking at Art Bell pictures for Sourcing the Art for last week's podcast.
Oh, you saw the tinfoil one?
It is art,
There's a really
the
cute
way,
one of him with a tinfoil
hat.
Yeah,
I've
and
seen
there's
that.
Also like one of him holding his cat. That's really good. I felt a real kinship to him because there are a lot of pictures of him in a weird podcast garage with a cat, just like us. Us millennials will reveal our nakedly capitalistic ambitions to sell you merchandise for 100%. Our podcast.
That's what the millennial dream is all about, like selling out and but being genuine about it.
Yeah, good luck.
It's a good bumper sticker too.
Give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT. Give us your merch ideas, share your EDM memories, ask for
they're
I don't
called
know
EDMeries.
EDMeries, yeah. Just share your, you can keep sending us ghost stories.
Yeah, ghost stories too.
They've been drying up. But if you have any alien stories, I would happily transition to alien stories as well.
And advice. We love advice.
Oh yeah, Tess wants to give more advice.
Not just me. You said you did too, Molly.
So yeah, give us a call, or you can also send us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
And our advice to you, keep watching the skies.
Never stop. That's it for this week's Night Call. You can follow us on Twitter.
Watching the skies for the drop.
It's up there somewhere. That's it for this week's Night Call. You can follow us on Twitter at Night Call Pod, Facebook at Night Call Podcast, Instagram at Night Call Podcast, and as always, give us a Night Call at 240-46-NIGHT. Please also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and a review if you are so inclined. We think that you should. You should be inclined. And that does it for this week's show. Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.